From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of February 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. As we finish up our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast, that with Agribull's Eric Snodgrass, and along the way we'll take up what's been happening with the agricultural news for today. Lots of things coming out of Washington, D.C., and we'll check in with Gary Schnitke. He has an update on the Arc County payments you might expect in October of this year for, of course, last year's crop, and it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 24th day of February. It's a Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Don't forget to get your tickets now for the all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House. You can do that online at willag.org or at 800-898-1065. Tickets still available, just $30, and they include your meal there at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. We probably should start with the cattle on feed report. It was just released from USDA. What the numbers say? Can you go through that for me, please?
You bet. On feed, February 1, 101%, Todd, pretty much right on the money with average estimates. Placements, 111%, again, right on the estimates. That puts us placed at 1.981 million head. Marketing is 110%, just a hair above the average trade guess of 109.8. So very much of a yawner type report. I think the feeder contracts may see a little bit of short covering Monday just because they had priced in my opinion, quite a bit of big placement numbers. Now that they got it, now that they didn't get anything bigger than the average guess, would be looking for maybe a little bit of short covering in the feeders next week.
Can you recap this week for me what you think really happened in Chicago?
I think that the USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum, going into a market where the beans looked technically vulnerable against the feed grains, and the technicals in general were very overbought and was suggesting that you needed to feed the bull. I don't think the USDA fed the bull between the 2 days. I think they fed the bull when it came to the acreage numbers, especially the wheat number being 46 million all wheat. And they fed the bull somewhat for the corn, keeping the acreage at 90 million. But they didn't feed the bull today when they came out with export numbers on their baseline projections, and they didn't feed it for the feed grains especially. I mean, they took wheat exports down 5% for next year at 50 million, and they took the corn exports down 325 million bushels. That's a 15% drop from the current marketing year. So that would have taken us below a 2 billion bushel carryover on their numbers for 17-18, Todd. So I think when it was all said and done, the technicals, the meal vulnerabilities, and the bean-corn spread unwinding probably ruled the week.
Does it worry you at all on the numbers that came out of USDA that part of the explanation was Brazil corn, one thing, and Ukraine corn, which we haven't really seen a lot of competition from, but their expectation is that that apparently is going to ramp up?
No to the Brazil concern, because I think as the dust is settling in Mato Grosso and the fog's kind of clearing up to where the delayed harvesting in the beans creating some real quality issues for the soybeans, not hurting their volume, but hurting their quality. I do think it's really going to hamper the massive or expected large increase in acres like people like CONAB are expecting for the second crop corn, which would take your full crop season and your double crop together up something like 30% over last year. I don't see that number being that big at this point. To the second issue with Ukraine, I think the more we go down this path, and I talked about this at a seed meeting yesterday in Covington. In fact, I was at the Beef House, and I had a sweet roll and a regular roll and a salad bar just thinking of you in about a week and a half. So it's like deja vu only backwards. But anyway, I think as time goes on, we see the dollar plays more and more of a big role, and even USDA is suggesting that. And so my sense is that they think that we're going to lose export demand because of Ukraine and because of Brazil. But I think that's almost all currency related at this point, because those feed grain supplies are going down little by little, and we're coming off a pretty tight supply in Brazil already.
Still, when we looked at USDA's numbers, I think they had ending stocks for the soybeans at 420 for next year. Is that right? I don't think they changed
that. That's exactly right. Yeah, and they took the average price up a dime to 960, which I think that's really the biggest one that made me want to scratch my head was same carryover and a higher average price. That again, very dollar sensitive issue, very crude oil sensitive issue. I find that number pretty high. I think it could be 40 to 50 cents too high, in fact.
And their carryout for corn was just under where we are today, right?
Yeah, about 100 million less, 2.215 billion. And here again, we would have been below that 2 billion bushel mark because they sliced the export number by 325 million bushels. I mean, to see a 15% decline in exports versus the current marketing year, they obviously think somebody's going to have a big crop and we're going to have currency pressure.
Yeah, that probably puts some light on the end of the tunnel, though. Wouldn't you think that maybe the U.S. should be the better supplier?
That's exactly what has been the case and what USDA's missed. And I'll go back to what you and I've talked about in the past here in the last month or two, is we're still running 75% ahead of the last marketing year in export sales. And we're approaching the halfway point for the marketing year. So I've had a lot of clients call, a lot of people at meetings say, where's the next corn rally before I go to planting because I've got old crop corn to sell? And I really think the highest likelihood will be in that mid-March to mid-April time period if we don't have a rapid corn planting weather pattern. In other words, what I'm getting at is the USDA is going to have to look at those exports again, I think, if we don't see them slide pretty dramatically in the next 30 days. And this wheat belt weather is not getting better. It's actually getting worse. And I think that'll be maybe one of the biggest movers next week between no rain in 10 days. And when we get that new drought monitor out, I think that could be a pretty substantial issue if we don't see this dollar come back on us.
Did they ask you how they're supposed to plant corn and move corn at the same time?
Yeah, and that's really something, you know, there's some March contracts coming due, so it doesn't surprise me that you're having some weaker basis patterns out there in the Corn Belt because your ethanol margins have slipped some, and you are getting some of that March delivery, which March delivery starts on the 28th. And so we're right around the corner to first notice day. So guys are going to have to make the decision, either roll out again or let that corn go to the elevator. So that's in the very short term. That's probably the biggest negative feature to the market in the corn for the next week. Beans, I think they still trade weather and the meal technicals. Meal technicals ended up being pretty supportive. We held the 200-day moving average in the lead month meal, and we held 325 meal when it was all said and done this week.
Hey, thanks so much. Looking forward to having you here in the great state of Illinois at Tuesday the 7th of March.
Sounds good, sir. I'll be there.
That's Mike Zuzulo, and he will be at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for the All Day Ag Outlook. We hope you will be too. 800-898-1065. Tickets are just $30. It might be easier just to go online at WILLAG.org. In today's agricultural news, we'll start in Washington, D.C. with the 93rd Annual Agricultural Outlook Forum. Your chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Mike Conaway, says not to look for a lot of drama this year in the Farm Bill proceedings and to forget about short-term extensions and the threat of permanent farm law.
We don't need that drama. We won't know any more in October of 18 than we know in September of 18, and there's no reason whatsoever that we don't get it done.
And done on time for the first time in 16 years, so producers, implement dealers, and creditors know how to plan. Conaway vowed there will be SNAP reforms in the 2018 House Farm Bill after 2 years of hearings on SNAP, though Senate Ag Democrats successfully opposed dramatic cuts to the program in the 2014 bill. The cotton, dairy, and ARC commodity programs will also see changes.
I think all of those we can, particularly dairy and crop and ARC, are more fine-tuning. I don't anticipate, other than the cotton, any big new programs like you saw in 14. Where we dumped direct payments that went to the PLC and ARC and the new milk program. I don't think that's going to happen this time. It'll be more the idea of fine-tuning those to get that done.
Top committee Democrat Colin Peterson strongly opposed any renewed efforts to split feeding programs out of the Farm Bill and stressed in a recorded message the need for a good, strong safety net to help producers weather a downturn. Now in its fourth year, USDA Chief Economist Rob Johansen gave a snapshot of the farm economy.
We are busy marketing the largest U.S. corn and soybean crop ever. China started to back out of its stock building policies for corn and cotton, and yet global stocks for some other commodities have continued to grow. Farm productivity continues to advance, exports are increasing, yet farm income has fallen more quickly than any time since the mid-1970s.
Johansen told ag hands to look for continued flat net farm income, lower rents and values, more acres shifting to soybeans versus corn, a drop in major crop acreage of 3.6 million acres total, and record meat, poultry, and dairy production, and perhaps throwing more cold water on ag income prospects back to Chairman Conaway. He argued against expanding the ethanol-driven renewable fuels program.
Protect the investments legitimately made on good faith, in good faith by folks in these ethanol plants based on a program they thought was going to be there forever. Protect that, allow them to harvest that investment, but don't make it any worse by adding on top of it.
Conaway vowed his committee will speak out on the RFS and other issues, even where the ag panel lacks jurisdiction, as long as producers are affected. Well, let's stay in D.C. and with things that are already in force, including a $1 trillion free trade agreement. That's right. Despite strong anti-trade comments from President Trump, a $1 trillion free trade agreement went into effect this week, called the Trade Facilitation Agreement. A CNN Money report says the agreement is designed to cut red tape and help solve problems like border delays and transportation bottlenecks. The World Trade Organization says it will cut a day and a half off the time needed to import goods and cut 2 days off the time needed to export products. The U.S. approved the deal during the Obama administration. A spokesman for the current U.S. trade representative did not immediately respond to a request for comments. And finally today, a Dow Jones report says the Dow and DuPont merger looks good for regulatory approval from the European Union. People familiar with the deal say it looks to be on track because the companies offered to sell some of their businesses to ease antitrust concerns. The European Commission is the EU's antitrust watchdog and appears ready to approve the deal after the companies offered their remedies. However, people monitoring the deal also say the decision is not necessarily completed, and some aspects of the deal could change. Another Dow Jones report says ChemChina extended its $43 billion offer for Syngenta to April the 28th, as it still looks for regulatory approval of the merger. The Chinese state-owned company issued a statement this week saying all other terms and conditions of the offer remain the same. China is pushing to step up scrutiny of the deal in a bid to curb capital outflow, and EU regulators have also asked for more information about the pending merger. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist, Agricultural Economist, here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. You've written an article for the Farm Doc Daily website, posted there at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, looking forward into this year and the ARC County payments that are delivered by the United States Department of Agriculture as part of the Farm Safety Net in the month of October. These are based off of the USDA NASS county yields, so they're not quite right, but they are good projections.
Yeah, so NASS released county yields yesterday, February 23rd. We use those in projecting what 2016 ARC county payments will be. FSA doesn't use NASS yields exactly when they calculate FSA yields, but usually the NASS yields are pretty close, and if anything, they tend typically are a little bit higher. So the estimates that we're projecting here are probably a bit conservative, but still within the ballpark.
And the other item that has to be figured and forward figured into this is the marketing year average.
Yep, and we're obviously not done with marketing year averages for corn, soybeans, and wheat for that matter. Corn and soybeans, the marketing year ends in August. We're using a 350 price in making those projections for corn and a 960 for soybeans. Both of those are 10 cents higher than the midpoint of the WASDE range currently, and we're just a little bit more optimistic, I guess, seeing where prices are currently. And again, it causes these payments to be probably a little bit conservative.
Last fall, farmers were pleasantly surprised when they received their payments. I suspect this will be something of a different year for them.
Yeah, in general, the payments will be lower. To give you a feel, in Illinois, there will be a lot of counties that don't get either corn or soybean payments. In fact, soybean payments will be no soybean payments in Illinois, maybe a dollar or two here and there, but virtually none. Corn, we can look for corn payments, larger corn payments in the extreme southern part of the state, and there will be some payments in the northern part of the state and south central Illinois as well. We're actually projecting a payment for Piatt County of $7. They haven't received any in the past 2 years. I'll caution them to be too optimistic about their $7 if they get a little bit of $3.50. If the price goes above $3.50, it goes away. So, but south central northern Illinois and extreme southern Illinois will get larger payments on Hart County this year.
Yeah, for those who don't recall, Piatt County was one of those counties that was an oddball last year, did not get an Hart County payment. Everybody else surrounding them got a fairly large-sized Hart County for corn. Piatt County did not. In fact, at the Ag Outlook Forum in Washington, D.C. this week, USDA pointed out that McLean County and Piatt County were substantially different in what they have. So I guess they can look forward to maybe a $7 payment, though I think they'll probably would prefer a higher than $3.50 cash price than they would to get the $7. So those are a couple of the items. What else are in these numbers that we need to know about? Anything?
So we put out maps of the U.S. There are some larger payments on Hart County for corn, and those occur mainly in the eastern Corn Belt. Ohio gets larger payments. Along the Ohio River, there's some larger payments, and down the Mississippi River, there's some larger payments as well. Basically, if we had 7% higher than the benchmark yield, you did not get a payment on corn, and most areas had exceptional corn yields. Soybeans, we see very few payments in the Midwest. Again, we had exceptional soybean yields across much of the Midwest. So even though the market year average price is projected below the benchmark price, yields wash those out. There are some payments in New York, Pennsylvania, and along the eastern seaboard, down the eastern seaboard. Wheat is projected to make large payments across much of the Midwest, except in one area, and that would be except in the heart of the wheat-growing areas, western Kansas, western Oklahoma, parts of Texas, western Nebraska. Again, the market year average price on soybeans, or excuse me, wheat, is well below the benchmark price, but those areas had exceptionally good yields, 50% above the benchmark, so that's what caused them not to have payments.
All right. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist, a farm management specialist here in Urbana-Champaign at the U of I. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass. Hang on just a second. Eric will be with us over at the Beef House, not next Tuesday, but the following one, the 7th day of March. And he'll kick off our all-day Ag Outlook around 8:30 in the morning Central Time, 9:30 in the Eastern Time Zone. You can buy your tickets still, willag.org, 800-898-1065. Eric, looking forward really to having you over at the Beef House again this year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. It's a lot of fun.
Let's take up some of the things that are happening though closer to home right now. Kind of an interesting weekend ahead of us. What do you see for our area?
Well, we have certainly had an extremely warm week. I mean, if you think about Wednesday, we got up into the lower 70s. That is, of course, set an all-time record right around here in Champaign. And that warmth has kind of hung on through early morning today on Friday. But things are going to change, and they're going to change pretty quickly. We've got a pretty powerful low-pressure system that's right now kind of skirting to our north. It's going into the Great Lakes region, and it's produced quite a bit of snow in parts of Nebraska, Iowa, southern Minnesota, Wisconsin, even parts of the Dakotas. And basically draped to the south of that big low-pressure system is a cold front, and it is racing our way right now. And as it comes through central Illinois today, it's going to basically fire up a nice line of storms a little kind of earlier this afternoon. But then those storms have the potential for becoming severe as they get over to Indiana and Ohio and Michigan, where basically the atmosphere is going to destabilize a lot better, and they're going to have much better conditions over there for kicking off some severe weather. You know, thankfully, though, nothing's in the ground, so this isn't going to be a big impact on crops. But the bigger news is basically what happens behind this. I mean, we're going to experience maybe a 30-degree change in temperature behind this front over the next 24, 36 hours. And I wouldn't be surprised if right here near Champaign, we see a little bit of light snow. Nothing major accumulating, but don't be surprised if you see some snowflakes really late tonight into early morning on Saturday. So we got a pretty powerful system coming through the middle of the country right now.
What about the bigger picture as we look forward?
Yeah, so we had a new update with the U.S. Drought Monitor the other day, and there's a couple things I want to talk about there. I went back and looked over the last 30 days of accumulated precipitation. Some areas that have me concerned would be Kansas, Missouri, and southern Illinois at this point. Basically, across those regions, we've seen a half inch or less over the last 30 days of rain, and that puts some dryness into the soil, you know, basically pre-season as we get into our planting. And we've also got some dryness across major wheat producing areas, so think Colorado, Kansas, and Oklahoma. But while at the same time I've given you some kind of negative news, there's also some really good news about that drought monitor update. And that is, eastern Oklahoma and Arkansas did get quite a bit of rain over the last 30 days, better than 2 inches, which helps kind of the longstanding drought in those two states. And also, we are not experiencing significant drought across Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Texas isn't in drought either. And all of those things point toward, you know, some kind of good signals for the start of the growing season, and that we don't have big areas of pre-season drought. So, there's a couple of pockets we watch, but across the bigger picture, we're not seeing too much that's going to point toward some major adversity as we start the next growing season.
You mentioned southern Illinois was in one of those dry pockets. I know they'd like to put anhydrous ammonia on eventually, but not wet enough or enough moisture to really seal up the tracks there. Central and northern Illinois managed to put some anhydrous ammonia on. Maybe we'll get a better start to the season. Can you tell me more about March? That's when folks will really start to get busy in the field.
Yeah, they will. And I'll tell you this, in the short term, we got a pretty active pattern. So got this system coming through this weekend. We have another one coming through on February 28th. That's going to basically bring some rain to the southern parts of the Corn Belt and then some more snow to the northern parts. But then what I see for the first maybe week and a half of March is a pretty cold pattern. We're going to get into what we call some northwest flow, and that's going to bring three Alberta clippers all kind of lined up in the first week of March. And that's going to dump some snow in the very northern parts of the growing region here in the central United States. And what's interesting was, you know, we had talked in the past about some prevent plant issues in the Dakotas because they had quite a bit of snow on the ground through mid-February. But things have changed recently. All that warmth, I mean, shoot, we saw above freezing temperatures 500 miles north of the U.S.-Canadian border. And as a result, a lot of that snow in the Dakotas has melted off. But we're going to be getting a little bit more over the coming days as things really cool back off for the first, let's call it the first 12 days of March. The coldest looks to be around March 7th, where we're going to dip back into well below normal temperatures. But I just want to say this, that does not mean we're going to have, you know, a cold rest of the spring. Some of the longer term forecasts that I've been looking at here, I've gotten three different methods, which all agree that say that maybe toward the end of March and when we get into April, we're going to go back toward that warmer than average kind of season that we've experienced for a lot of February and January. So there is some strong indication that we're going to have an early spring in terms of temperatures. You know, the big unknown, though, is just to try to figure out what the precipitation patterns are going to look like as we start to get that field work in. So that's why you got to just keep listening, stay tuned, and we'll give you those updates every week.
Hey, Eric, thanks so much. You have a great weekend, and looking forward to seeing you over at the Beef House on the 7th day of March.
Yep, it'll be great. Thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agribull, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. Don't forget to buy your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's the 7th day of March, a bit more than a week away now. It's a Tuesday, not the next one, but the following one in Covington, Indiana. Tickets are just $30. Online at willag.org or at 800-898-1065. I'm Todd Gleason.